Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. A definitive reading on inflation came out today in Washington. The Labor Department reported that inflation for all of 1981, as measured by consumer prices, was 8.9%. That was lower than most economists had forecast and was, in fact, the lowest since 1977. The inflation rate for 1980 was 12.4%. But, as we hear from Rob Marr of station WWJ in Detroit, the 1981 rate won't cut much ice with the auto industry.
The United Auto Workers Union, Ford, and General Motors councils are faced with even more layoffs, which may help them decide to continue contract talks with the two largest automakers. Ford and GM have announced they'll close a combination of 14 of 46 plants next week, with indications the short-term layoffs will stay at the 80,000 level through February. On top of that, there are 226,000 long-term jobless workers. GM announcing that it's going to shut down a line at the plant which makes vans and four-wheel drive vehicles in April. That will add 2,000 more indefinite jobless workers. The auto contract talks are in recess until the representatives meet Saturday. The job of the union heads and bargaining councils is to convince skeptical rank and filers that the crisis in the industry is real and needs some union concessions for at least the short term. Rob Marr for CBS News, Detroit.
Pontiac, Michigan, in the grip of continued high unemployment, is gearing up for Super Bowl 16 day after tomorrow, hoping, as we hear from Charles Osgood, that the event will do the city an economic good turn.
Pontiac Northern High School Band getting ready for the big Super Bowl parade. By this time of year, the school band is usually better than this. But this practice was only their eighth of the year. They got a very late start because of budget cuts. The same budget cuts that made the school cancel the senior prom, close the library, do away with all the sports teams. Unemployment in Pontiac is 23.9%, much worse than that among blacks. Most downtown stores have been closed and boarded up. Sears, Federated, and Kresge's have moved out. What they've done for this week is to try to turn part of downtown into Bourbon Street North, putting restaurants, shops, and concessions into some of the old abandoned stores. Organizer Susan Atwood says the locals are loving it.
They're all getting very nostalgic and very excited about the city being the way it used to be, thriving with lots of activity in the downtown area.
At the old Eagle Theater, where they had the Miss Pontiac Silverdome pageant, the song seemed to echo the Pontiac chin-up attitude. The hope is that after Sunday, after the Super Bowlers leave town, some of this will stick. Maybe even that investment money will come in and keep some of the stores going. What they really need, of course, is for the automobile business to pick up. That's what would bring Pontiac back to life. Who's going to win on Sunday? Some say San Francisco, some say Cincinnati. But around here, when you ask that question, they smile and say, Pontiac will win. Charles Osgood, CBS News, Pontiac, Michigan.
After Sunday, Bourbon Street North will revert to its official name, Saginaw Street. Washington has sent a signal to Moscow, a signal of continued concern over the Polish crisis, with yesterday's announcement that the meeting between Secretary of State and Foreign Minister Gromyko later this month has been cut from 2 days to one. CBS News Moscow correspondent David Andelman reports that the announcement was reported with great terseness by the Soviet news agency.
A TASS statement failed to point out the omission of the second day, observing only that the two would meet January 26th in Geneva with, in TASS's words, a view to continuing the exchange of opinions begun by them in September of last year in New York. It was the first Soviet mention of a date for the scheduled meeting, and it follows a slight easing of the tough rhetoric that had, until the last couple of days, marked all mention of the United States since the Reagan administration imposed sanctions against the Soviet Union last month. But this week's issue of the Soviet weekly Novaya Vremya, in a conciliatory analysis, is urging a calm and active dialogue between East and West, observing that the U.S. and its NATO allies should realize they need such a dialogue, in the weekly's words, not less than the Soviet Union and its friends. Still, none of this prevented a Soviet lieutenant general from publishing a lengthy diatribe in this morning's issues of the Soviet Communist Party daily Pravda against American production of chemical weapons. The article, transmitted in full by TASS, accuses the U.S. of breaking off discussions leading toward a ban on such weapons nearly 2 years ago. David Andelman, CBS News, Moscow.
CBS News Warsaw correspondent Bert Quinn reports that about 100 Polish intellectuals have written a letter condemning martial law and asking the United Nations to help restore civil liberties in Poland. The letter was signed by writers, scholars, economists, actors, directors, and others, and was sent to the Polish parliament, which discusses the martial law issue next week. Jailhouse author Jack Henry Abbott was convicted yesterday in New York, but not of the charge pressed by the prosecution. Chris Kelly was there.
The jury gave Jack Henry Abbott the verdict he wanted. Not guilty as charged of second-degree murder, but guilty instead of first-degree manslaughter. Norman Mailer, who encouraged Abbott's writings, called the verdict fair. But the father-in-law of the man Abbott killed said the verdict was outrageous.
He's going to be back out on the street. He's murdered two people. He's been convicted of murdering two people. How many do you have to murder before the state says, no, you cannot go back out on the street. You cannot live in society. It is very difficult to live in any urban community. And you, Jack Abbott, who have murdered two people, do not have the right to ever walk on the streets again.
Abbott convinced the jury that he acted under what's called extreme emotional disturbance when he killed a waiter outside a New York restaurant last summer. Lawyers for Abbott, who wrote a book about prison life, said his act resulted from his background. Chris Kelly, CBS News, New York.
Public outrage over the handling of rape cases in Britain has claimed its first political casualty. And we'll hear about that from Martha Teichner in London.
Nicholas Fairbairn, Solicitor General of Scotland, resigned under pressure last night after a furious attack in the House of Commons over his errors in a rape case in Glasgow that has been front page news for over a week. Three teenagers were released, never to be prosecuted, after allegedly slashing a woman's wrists and then raping her. One of the youths apparently confessed. But the three were let go, according to Fairbairn, because a psychiatrist had reported that the 31-year-old victim was so upset she might commit suicide if forced to testify in court. There was no concern over the fact that her assailants would not be punished. Fairbairn's justification unleashed immediate fury, especially when the case was reported at the same time. Several other controversial rape cases were generating daily demands in Parliament for changes in the laws governing rape in Britain. Fairbairn made his predicament worse by talking to the press about the case before addressing Parliament. Earlier this week, Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher told the House of Commons that most rapists should get mandatory jail sentences, not now required. Martha Teichner, CBS News, London.
Two members of the political arm of the Irish Republican Army, one of them a member of the British Parliament, are being held in Buffalo today on charges of trying to enter the United States with false identification. They were hoping to attend the annual testimonial dinner of the pro-IRA Irish Northern Aid Committee in New York. The MP is Owen Caron, who was elected to Parliament after the death of hunger striker Bobby Sands. This is the ninth anniversary of the Supreme Court decision that legalized most abortions, and President Reagan scheduled meetings with two anti-abortion groups. Groups supporting abortion rights complained that they were not able to win a conference with the president. The weather this morning is something that most Americans still would prefer not to think about, but of course they have to. The principal feature right now, according to Hugh Crowther of the Severe Storm Center in Kansas City, is a new storm system developing over the Rocky Mountain area.
This is spreading heavy snow across the southern and central Rockies and also threatens to bring heavy snow to much of the central U.S., that is the central and northern plains and the Great Lakes region. Right now there's winter storm warnings out for northern Arizona and northern New Mexico. Across Colorado, Wyoming, into eastern Montana, and then for about the northern half of the Great Plains region and also southern Minnesota. And then winter storm watches have been posted from northern Kansas through the northern Missouri, southern Iowa, into the Michigan.
Crowther says that storm in the northern Midwest is heading toward the northeast, so parts of that area may get another heavy dose of snow over the weekend. President Chun Doo-hwan today handed the South Korean parliament a new plan for unification of his country with the communist North. He said he wants to show the North and the world South Korea's genuine desire to attain unification. Gold prices are holding steady overseas today. The price was fixed in London this morning at $377.75 an ounce, just about unchanged from yesterday's close. The dollar is mixed this morning on the major foreign markets.
Newsbreak. A political partnership of long standing ends at the White House today. Lynn Nofziger, the strategist who teamed up with Ronald Reagan in 1966, is calling it quits. I'm Christopher Glenn, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. I don't like government. It's just that simple, is the reason Nofziger offers for his departure. Of course, it's not really that simple, and we'll look at some of the complexities of the situation right after this.
These days, while other cars offer you mere rebates or sell-a-thons, Lynx from Lincoln Mercury offers you something better, something no competitor has. Not Chrysler, GM, Toyota, or Datsun. Nobody. Lynx offer number one, free scheduled maintenance for 2 full years, so virtually the only thing you have to pay for is gas. Lynx offer number two, a free 2-year warranty, free for 2 years or 24,000 miles, whichever comes first. This limited warranty covers everything except accidents, abuse, tires, and fluids, but we don't stop there. On cars delivered now through March 13th from your Lincoln Mercury dealer, you'll also get a 5% cash bonus, 5% off the base vehicle sticker price on any new 1982 Lynx. Apply it to your down payment or get a check direct from Lincoln Mercury. Limit one per customer. Lynx from Lincoln Mercury. It takes a car built this well to make you an offer this good.
Presidential advisor Lynn Nofziger makes a rare public appearance at the White House today. Photographers will be there to capture the handshake as Nofziger says goodbye to official Washington. It's a familiar scene for Nofziger, who quit a similar post when Ronald Reagan was governor of California and who quit several times in the pre-election campaign, only to be persuaded to return. Today's move was not unexpected. White House correspondent Bill Lynch notes that despite all the ties that bind the president and Nofziger, he just never seemed to fit in.
He is a rumpled, acerbic, somewhat profane, and not at all buttoned-down member of the Reagan team. And he sort of stood out like a sore thumb, to Nancy Reagan at least, a social embarrassment. Did not fit in with her image of the genteel Reagan presidency.
Nofziger was a maverick. He wouldn't wear his White House identification pin, for example, nor fill out the background forms for the standard FBI security check. If they're so damn smart, let them figure it out, he said. And to White House regulars, he was something of a forgotten man.
Very few of us have ever seen Lynn Nofziger in the halls of the West Wing of the White House itself, where the true power lies. There is no doubt that he consulted with the president and passed on his advice, but his principal role during the first year of the Reagan presidency was to maintain a link to the right wing of the Republican Party. And there are those who say that he was not even very effective in making that bridge between the president and the Jesse Helms crowd.
Despite his behind-the-scenes role, Nofziger did occasionally shine.
There was one moment in which Nofziger was in the spotlight, and that, of course, was last March 30th, the day the president was shot and wounded. And Press Secretary Jim Brady was the most seriously wounded person that day. And Nofziger, with his longtime history of dealing with the press, took over the responsibility of communicating information in the first hours, and I must say was a rock of stability in that time, and everyone recalls him being very steady and quite cool and accurate during those very trying hours.
And does the official breakup mean a breakup of the personal relationship between Lynn Nofziger and Ronald Reagan as well?
I think there's a good personal relationship. It goes back a long way, and Lynn obviously likes Ronald Reagan, and I think the sentiment is returned. They just did not, they were not a good match in this particular setting in the White House for political and professional reasons. And as I say, Nancy Reagan had her social objections and image problems with Nofziger, but I think they will continue to be friends and correspond and talk on the phone and get together in California, perhaps.
And now this.
Hello, this is Bob Newhart. Golly, I don't know if penguins can sing. I don't know who invented applesauce. Listen, I think you want the public library. The library, right. See,
if you have any questions at all, you can call.
Give them a jingle.
I'm the library.
A public service message of the American Library Association and your local library.
After all, where do they have more answers?
Newsbreak. I'm Christopher Glenn, CBS News.
CBS News. The issue of a... CBS News. The issue of abortion comes back to Washington. I'm Richard C. Hotelet reporting on the CBS Radio Network. 9 years ago today, the Supreme Court ruled that abortion in the first 3 months of pregnancy is not illegal. Today, those who approve and those who oppose that decision have converged on Washington, where efforts are in progress to reverse the ruling through a constitutional amendment. Anti-abortion forces started their demonstration at the top, invited to the White House to see President Reagan, who shares their views. Reverend Jerry Falwell, leader of the Moral Majority, spoke with reporters after that meeting.
The meeting with the president was a most rewarding one. He reaffirmed his unswerving commitment to the pro-life cause. And I would just say that I sensed a unity of Americans in this room today towards somehow, some way, and very quickly developing a legislative or judicial means by which the biological holocaust in this country that's costing 1.5 million lives a year among unborn babies can be stopped.
Those who want women to have the right of abortion in the legal term were not invited to the White House. Judith Whitacombe of the National Abortion Rights Action League spoke at a press conference.
No matter what the most extreme anti-choice zealots say, the Hatch Amendment ultimately can deny abortion to all women, regardless of circumstances. And we realize that other proposals to amend the Constitution in order to outlaw abortion are still very much alive.
An Associated Press NBC News poll has found that 3 out of 4 Americans oppose a constitutional amendment that would allow Congress to forbid abortion. More news after this.
Last night we were late for a movie. Maybe I was driving too fast. Suddenly I saw this white glow about 400 feet up the street. The glow got brighter, so I put on the brakes, and that's when I saw the cat. Her collar was reflecting my headlights. That Hart's collar saved her life for sure.
Protect your dog or cat right now with the Hart's 2-in-1 Plus Nighttime Safety Reflecting Collar, the first flea and tick collar that reflects oncoming car headlights and kills fleas and ticks for 5 months. The Hart's 2-in-1 Plus Reflecting Collar. Now the Hart's Flea and Tick Killer can be a lifesaver too.
Super Sunday is January 24th, and CBS Radio Sports brings you Super Bowl 16. The Cincinnati Bengals will go head-to-head with the San Francisco 49ers. Jack Buck with the play-by-play and Hank Stram with expert analysis. Dick Stockton at the top of the game, Brent Musburger at halftime. Cincinnati against San Francisco in Super Bowl 16. The action begins at 3:45 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday, January 24th, on the CBS Radio Network. Hear it here.
The White House says it welcomes today's report on consumer prices as evidence of substantial progress in the fight against inflation. The government reported that for all of 1981, inflation at the retail level was 8.9%, the lowest in 4 years. For December, prices rose a relatively modest 0.4%. But critics charge that the improvement comes only at the cost of recession and high unemployment. Analysts say a drop in meat prices and smaller fuel prices and fuel price increases also contributed to the drop in inflation. The 10-nation European Economic Community reported today that the number of people out of work rose above 10 million at the end of last year for the first time. The rate of unemployment in Europe now stands at 9% of the labor force, slightly higher than that of the United States. Another expert witness at the Atlanta murder trial of Wayne Williams today linked the defendant to microscopic carpet fibers found on the bodies of 2 murdered youths. A fiber expert for the FBI said the evidence indicates that Williams may have taken the victims into the home he shared with his parents. The expert, Harold Dedman, said the odds were 8,000 to 1 against finding the fibers from the unusual carpeting in Williams' bedroom. Stocks and other news after this.
The Bell System presents the Commodores.
Oh, friend, playing like kids on your mind, touching you time after time. Oh, friend, yesterday, isn't tomorrow way for reaching out to your friend. Reach out.
Another accident today in the Kentucky coal fields. One miner was killed, another trapped when a roof or pillar fell on them at the mine in Phelps in eastern Kentucky. That's about 60 miles from the scene of a mine explosion Wednesday that killed seven men. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones average is down 2.38. Volume on the big board, nearly 17.5 million shares. The Dow Jones Industrials stand now at 845.03. Richard C. Hotellett, CBS News.